Welcome back to Play It Loud. My name's Rich, and I'm actually solo today. We have a special treat for you guys today. As some of you may know, our most downloaded episode, maybe you don't know, but if you listened to the previous episode, we indicated that our most downloaded episode in 46 episodes was our interview with Citizen Soldier, Jake Segura from Citizen Soldier specifically. And we did that in our ninth episode. Jake was gracious enough to come on and talk to us about the band and the upcoming tour with Smash Into Pieces. They eventually went on to do an acoustic tour and released their album at the time, ICU. And we have gotten a chance to see him a couple times in Chicago, where we're based, not only with Smash Into Pieces at the Subterranean venue, but also on his acoustic tour. We saw him at the Forge in Joliet. And, you know, those guys are so down to earth. They have a huge following, and he agreed to sit down with me and do a follow-up interview ahead of their headlining tour. They're doing 14 cities in 2024, starting in April, and we're lucky enough to have them come back to Chicago at the end of April at the Bottom Lounge. So without any further ado, here is my interview with Jake, and hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. He's a great guy to interview, to talk to. He's so honest, and he doesn't really hold back, and very down to earth. So enjoy. So thanks for joining us today. So let me get right to the questions. But before I do that, I wanted to let you know we are recording our 47th episode for Play It Loud podcast, and you are on our ninth episode. So you were one of the first people we interviewed, and you are the most downloaded episode that we have in all 46 episodes that we've recorded. So I just wanted to let you know that ahead of time. I think that speaks a lot to your fan base. So
that's great.
They're silent but strong. So last time we sat down for an interview, we discussed the release of ICU, which was about a year ago. So I wanted to know, now that you've had some time to reflect, where does that land as far as, or rank amongst the six releases that you guys have?
I mean, it's hard as a songwriter. You know, if you are continually writing and trying to perfect your craft, it's really hard to not have the most recent release be your favorite, right? So I think for me, I can go back and look at songs off of different albums, like This Is Your Sign or Down the Rabbit Hole, or, you know, different records we've put out that I'm like, man, that song still really holds up. It's a great song. But as far as a body of work as a whole, I think that, you know, ICU and Scarecrow, for me, our most recent two releases are both records that we're really proud of.
When we talked last, you said that maybe certain songs would resonate with people off that album, or people might like them the most. And it seems like You're Enough is the most downloaded song from that release, at least on what I can find on my end from iTunes. Why do you think people relate to that song the most off that album?
I just think, like, when we were writing that song, I was just like, you know, it's sad that we can't meet all our fans. It's sad that we have fans and Indonesia and Japan and places that hopefully we get there someday on tour. It'd be amazing to go out there, but, you know, the likelihood isn't very high. Not a lot of bands get to a place in their career where they can do things like that. So the thought process was, you know, if we never have the opportunity to get out there, you know, what's like the one message we would want to give to those fans that we can't see in person and give a hug and have a conversation with? And it's essentially that, you know, it's that your worth is not based on, it's not merit based. It's not something you have to earn. You know, it's about being a human being with potential that hasn't been realized yet, and how tragic it would be to have that taken from the world early before that can be realized. And so I think that song did well because we didn't overthink it. I tried to. We were writing in Atlanta with Josh Landry, Low Spirit is his artist name. And I remember singing him like a demo chorus and being like, you know, not that, but like, you get the idea. And he's like, no, that. He's like, that's the chorus. you're overthinking it. And so, you know, I think we just kept it really simple and sincere. And I think that's why it's resonating so much.
So you're six albums into your tenure with Citizen Soldier. How do you think you've grown as a songwriter over the last just couple years compared to when you started? I know we talked a little bit about this last time, but just over the last couple albums, Scarecrow, ICU, and then your upcoming album, how do you think you've grown over the last couple years in your songwriting?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm still learning. I'm still, like, there's still so many days where I sit down and write something and I'm like, have I used that melody before? Like, is this... Does this sound familiar in a good way, or is this something I've done? And so it's hard. It's really hard because, and that's why I love to co-write so much, because it really gets you out of your box. I'm an infinitely better writer when I'm in the room with somebody else than by myself. And I think that's because it just gets you in a different place creatively, and it puts some like healthy pressure on you to step up. And like when you're by yourself, it's easy to get distracted. And so I think like my work ethic as a writer has gotten a lot better. I think I'm getting better at taking risks and putting myself in uncomfortable situations to try and learn and do things that I haven't done before. It's hard because I have empathy for fans, because I remember being like a fan of like Shinedown growing up and hearing that Sound of Madness record. And that record is one of the most influential records on me coming up in the music industry. And I remember like them putting out more music and being like, oh man, I missed that sound from Sound of Madness, you know? And it's like, now that I'm writing records, we have fans say things like, oh man, I miss like their old sound. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that anymore, because I'm not that writer anymore. I'm better. You know what I mean? It's like, they like, there's something about like that sincerity and that simplicity of where I was at that time. And I'm honored that they appreciate that. But I think that I worked really hard to get more tools in my tool belt so that, you know, we can not be in a box as a band. I think like something we pride ourselves on is we could open up for a band like Breaking Benjamin or Nickelback or Shinedown. But, you know, we're really well known for our ballads, and we're not afraid to cross into that pop realm or alternative realm or almost indie sounding realm. And it doesn't matter, because with our message and with our sound, you know, it still sounds familiar. It still feels like home to our fans. So I think we've given ourselves a lot of flexibility, and we're not in a box.
Do you ever go back and listen to your old music, or maybe somebody you're collabing with? Do you ever go back and listen with them and say, I really want to achieve some of our old sound, but bring in my new skill set as a songwriter? Have you guys done that in the past?
No, because I don't want to go backwards. I think sonically, like we have a song called Never Good Enough on one of our older records that has a really cool string hook with a guitar riff that I thought was really cool. And on this new record that we're putting out this year, we were trying to figure out what to do with the song that we have. And we ended up being like, hey, like, what if we, you know, did something like in this song, Never Good Enough, where there's like a string lick and some guitar going on underneath it, you know? So like, we'll have moments like that where we're like, let's kind of do a throwback or a callback to an older sound or style. But I would hope that despite using that style or sound, the songwriting is still better. It still feels more mature. It still feels like it's grown up a little bit, if that makes sense.
It does. About this time last year, you were getting ready for your North America to support Smash Into Pieces on the North American tour. And how did that tour go with them? I mean, it was your first tour nationally, if I'm not mistaken. And it was a big risk for you guys. Just give me maybe the Cliff's Notes version of how that went, how you kept your body and your voice healthy day after day for the tour. Maybe some of the things that came up during the tour that you were surprised with, or challenges, that sort of thing, because it was your first tour.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that like one of my favorite memories being in this band was we were at the last show of the tour at Racket in New York City, and we were just hugging and high-fiving after that show, because we've had so many I mean, I had vocal damage. I had all this bad technique that I had to relearn because I never anticipated the band would become this. Right. So I had to really change my perspective from this is just a fun passion project to this is like something that is going to be my career and provide for my family. And I need to take it seriously. You know, it's like being an athlete, you know, you have this window to go and provide for your family and you have to do everything you can to maximize it. So the fact that we got through that tour and I didn't, you know, blow my voice out or, you know, I was able to take care of it and, you know, be disciplined with my warm-ups and my cool downs and that we were able to get through it, I think was just a huge win for us. And people knowing that we opened and played a 40-minute set might roll their eyes to that because, you know, we're going to have to do a headlining set now, which is twice as long. But, you know, you got to celebrate the little wins along the way because it took like that journey to relearning singing and protecting my voice is one of the, like mentally and emotionally, one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. And so I think that that's something that we're really proud of. It was a great experience. The Smash guys were really good to us. We had no idea what to expect. The first show of the tour was in Montreal. So we drove from Salt Lake City all the way up there for our first show. And we were just kind of like, man, what are we doing? Like, are we ready for this? Like, do we deserve to be here? But you know, it quickly, you know, we went to Toronto and there were a bunch of people there to see us. There was a line to talk to us afterwards. We went to Scully's in Columbus, Ohio, and it was the same overwhelming response. And so we were blown away by how many people were waiting to see us live. And, you know, after that, we followed that up with an acoustic tour, which is people say is really risky because a lot of fans don't want to go see an acoustic show. They want full band. And we sold out almost the entire tour without a bunch of bands under us. So we've just been overwhelmed with the support and the response. And we just feel motivated to keep stepping it up and keep delivering.
So on that tour, you and Chris Adam from Smash Into Pieces, he's the lead vocalist for Smash Into Pieces. You guys did an acoustic version of 6 Feet Deep. And first of all, how did that song come about? And did that inspire your acoustic tour at all?
No, it didn't. It didn't really inspire the acoustic tour. The reason for the acoustic tour is simply that we have so many ballads that are like in our top 10 of our catalog. You know, for a lot of bands, the ballads don't do as well. And for us, that's like, those are our most streamed songs. So for the Smash Tour, for example, we couldn't play our most popular songs because they were ballads, right? So the acoustic tour was more about giving fans an opportunity to hear those songs. And that version of 6 Feet Under with Chris Adam was totally random. We were at Mount Shasta in California in between our Portland and Sacramento shows, or maybe Sacramento and LA, I can't remember. But they just like sprung it on us. They were like, hey, do you want to be on this acoustic version with us? And I was like, sure. And we jumped into a hotel room. We were in Pear, their guitarist, his hotel room, and got my vocals tracked in like 45 minutes and we were done. And that was it. And they took it back to Sweden and mixed it and everything. And it turned out really cool.
Are those guys as advertised? I mean, they seem very, very down to earth. They seem just like hanging like with one of your buddies. Is that kind of how they are? Or was there any language barrier? I mean, they all speak English, obviously, but are they as advertised? They're one of my favorite bands. So I'm just curious.
They definitely speak a really good amount of English. So there was no communication issue. It's funny. I think a lot of people probably see their onstage get up and like, you know, like they have a very elaborate light show and they have like an image and a look, right? And so people can see that and sometimes make assumptions about ego or character. And those guys are just super fun and goofy and great to hang around. I mean, Chris Adam, it's funny, the first few shows I was like, this guy does not like me. this guy does not want to talk to me at all. But I think it's easy when people go quiet to assume that they're judging you, when in all reality, they could be thinking the same thing about you, right? And so we had a couple ice-breaking conversations at our show at Subterranean in Chicago. And before you know it, we were like, you know, showing each other demos and ideas and writing ideas together and just kind of hanging out. So those guys are really kind. They were really good to us. Nothing but positive things to say about them.
So you mentioned Subterranean. That's actually the show that I, myself and Ryan and Bree went to, and we met you there before right. the show. How good was the Lou Malnati's pizza?
It was really good. It was really good. I underestimated, I know it's deep dish, but like, I did not understand it was that deep. I gotta be honest. I don't want to offend Chicago natives here, but I think I'm a Detroit style guy.
Mm, yeah.
I think that's where I live. Like, I think the New York thing is cool. The Chicago thing is cool, but I like enough crust, but not too much. Mm-hmm. So it was really good. It was a nice change. It was a different vibe for sure than what we're used to at home. But I think the best pizza I've had has been in Michigan on tour, if I'm being honest.
That's okay. We won't hold it against you. Although I would say Chicago probably has the most variety of pizza. We have deep dish. We have stuffed. We have thin crust. New York's got that.
I've only tried one place.
Next time you come here, we got to get you some different pizza, which is basically in April. You'll be here at the end of April at the Bottom Lounge. And by the way, the Bottom Lounge is one of the best places you'll ever play. It's a fantastic venue. You guys chose well. So.
Yeah, we're excited because, and I'll be petty here for a minute. Am I allowed to be petty?
Oh yeah,
let's be petty for a second. We had a promoter at a different venue, not in Chicago, but close by in Illinois, a well-known venue. I won't say any names, but we really wanted to play a show there, and they sent us a pretty insulting offer, a pretty lowball offer, And we said, okay, you know, we'll just go sell out the Bottom Lounge instead, and then we'll come back in April and have another conversation. That's exactly what we did. Mm. So it's been a fun one to see sell out, because we've had a little bit of doubt in that market about our band and what we can accomplish there. But we're really excited for that show. It sold out 2.5 months in advance. The thing is a 750 cap room. So we're really excited. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, there's not a bad seat in that house. I mean, it's standing room only, but, you know, I can stand in the back of that venue and see perfectly. It's a great venue. It's more wide than it is deep, if you will. And you have right. to go through their restaurant to get into there, and their restaurant has amazing food, so you're in good hands there.
Great.
When you're out on the road, I see you had 17 songs, right? So when you're out on the road and you're thinking, we're going to do our next album a year later, are you writing on the road, or do you wait till you get back, or are you kind of doing both?
I'm always doing a little bit of everything. I mean, I'm like, we release a record, right? So like last year we were releasing ICU over the course of the year, and I knew that I needed to have another record finished by the time ICU was done releasing. Right. So that's kind of how we work, is while one record's being released, another one's being written and recorded. So we're always doing a little bit of everything. I would say, like, people need to keep in mind, we're only on the road for like 2.5 to 3 weeks at a time. Like, there's enough time in between tours for me to write. I don't necessarily feel this pressure to like, man, I need to be writing, you know, right before sound check and these different things. We try to be pretty smart with our time, but yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, we're always doing a little bit of everything. Like, I'm posting a TikTok every day. I'm posting a reel every day. I'm looking at, you know, who do I want to go write with soon? Like, maybe I feel like we have a lot of really strong up-tempo songs in the holster, but maybe we're a little bit weak on ballads. So maybe I need to be thinking about some ballads and writing some of those. So it's a lot, you know, it's balancing a lot, but we love it. We're not complaining.
So we touched on your upcoming tour, and you're going to be headlining the tour, but you have support from Halocene and Icon for Hire. How did you choose those two bands, or how did that come about?
There are a lot of bands that have, like, there are a lot of bands that have big names that maybe, like, they don't. You know, like, just because you have radio success doesn't mean you can pull a lot of people to a live show. And just because you can pull a lot of people to a live show doesn't mean you have radio success. just because you have radio doesn't mean you stream well, vice versa. Like, a lot of this industry is smoke and mirrors. So you got to be careful with, and like when we choose who's coming out with us, we obviously want someone who is like, they're good people that we feel like we can enjoy being around. And it's like a good culture. Like, that's priority number one. But another thing is like, this is what we do for a living now. Like, we take those decisions very seriously. Like, this is like providing for our families. So at the end of the day, we're very careful. We're very particular. And the second biggest thing we look for is we want content creators. We don't want bands that they put the songs out and they kind of sit back and they're not doing the other stuff. They're not doing the TikTok. They're not doing Facebook, Instagram. Like, they're not as social media savvy. Like, that's a really tough sell for us, because we invest a lot of time into marketing these tours and making sure these rooms are full. You know, if we're going to leave our families for 3 weeks, we want to play for as many people as possible. So Icon for Hire and Hallowscene both really meet that criteria. They're not just writers and musicians. They're content creators. They know how to market, and they have really loyal, dedicated fan bases. So that's kind of the criteria that it broke down to for us.
I can tell you this, that when we saw you on the acoustic tour at the Forge in Joliet, Hallow Hill was your support for that, and they did an amazing job. I didn't know who they were before that. I got a chance to talk to the guys after their set out by the merch table. We got to know them a little bit, and they're very, very down-to-earth guys. Apparently, they're from where you guys are from, Utah.
Yeah, Caleb, their guitarist, he ran merch for us on the Smash Into Pieces tour. Mm. And we knew he was in the band, and he's a really good person. That's another thing. Like, I don't want to have this, like, self-righteous, like, act like we did them some favor, because they're a great band and they have great songs. But when we're around people that are great people and we know we can do something kind for them that they don't ask for or feel entitled to, we're going to do it as often as we can. You know, we just really liked Caleb. We knew that he was really passionate about his band and his project. And, you know, having that kind of energy around you when you're playing shows is really motivating as well. It keeps you on the grind.
So this next tour, what can people expect when they come to the tour? Is there any special songs or highlights they can look forward to? What do you guys got planned?
I say this on stage a lot. I think we may never be the best musicians. I might not ever be the best singer. We might not have the flashiest light show. I mean, they can expect the most advanced production they've seen from us yet, as far as lights and things. But I think what's going to stand out is we just want our concerts to feel like the most therapeutic environment and place that they could possibly be. You know, you're surrounding people with other people who have been through very similar traumas and struggles, right? So I think it's more about, like, we jokingly call them non-blood family reunions, right? It's like, we want those people at the Chicago show, the Bottom Lounge, to build friendships and connect. And because, like, that's the best suicide prevention you can possibly access, is connection, friendship, having someone there to talk to. And we want people at our shows to be making those connections. So I think, you know, you can expect, we have partnerships with mental health companies that we're announcing soon. We're going to have some mental health benefits that we're going to be able to offer our fans soon that we haven't announced yet that we're super excited about. That'll be part of the tour. And, you know, we've also thought about, you know, growing up, when you go to a show, what's your checklist? What are all the things you want to see? So having the other bands on stage with us, performing collaborations, throwing in an unreleased song, like, none of those things are off the table. Those are all things that we want to have be a part of the show.
You guys have been invited to Rockfest in Wisconsin in July. How excited are you personally, or how excited is the band to play alongside bands like Shinedown, Beartooth, From Ashes to New, 30 Seconds to Mars, Jelly Roll? That's got to be just such a trip for you guys, right? I mean, to play alongside those big names?
It is. I'll be honest with you. Like, we appreciate that, but we're also very careful not to be like the Like, at the end of the day, we want to play for a lot of our fans. And that's what matters most to us. Like, we really love those opportunities, and they're great opportunities to grow. But, like, we try to keep our feet on the ground and try to be grounded about, if you get too lost in the politics of, like, oh, why are we on this stage? Or why are we not playing with this band? Or why is this band playing above? I mean, like, it just turns into high school. And we try to keep our perspective very rigidly focused on, you know, we get to go play for people that care about us and our music, that we're helping, and connect with them and support them. And, like, whether that's at Rockfest or at a venue in Iowa City, like, we love it. It's all meaningful, you know, whether it's 100 people or 10,000 people. When it's less people, it's just an opportunity to connect on a deeper level, because you're not spread so thin, right? So that's kind of like my non-answer answer. But, like, to speak to the excitement, I think what we're also excited about is we've had a lot of people on our way up as a band try to pressure us into signing deals that would have been financially catastrophic for us as a band, and try to pressure us into saying things like, you'll never have these opportunities, you'll never have these festivals, you'll never have this or that if you don't give us this. And we've been very deliberate about keeping this project independent since its inception. And so it's been really rewarding, because not only are we doing Rockfest, but we're also doing Upville in Michigan, we're doing Welcome to Rockville in Florida, we're doing Louder Than Life in Louisville, and we're doing Aftershock Festival in Sacramento. So, I mean, other than Sonic Temple, which we're likely going to play next year, the fact that, you know, our bassist, Juanita, he always says, you know, if you build it, they will come. You know, he says that over and over and over. Like, let's just put our heads down. Let's not get lost in the politics. If we show that people care about what we're doing, and if we have data, if we have numbers, this many people are coming out to see our shows, you know, they will come. They will recognize what we're doing. And so we're seeing that now. They told us that we'd never be able to access these festivals, and now we're playing 5 in 1 year. And that's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. It's completely unbelievable, especially from where you guys started from, and being a band from Utah. I mean, how many bands are from Utah, right? So if you had to list them, there's probably just a few. You guys done an amazing job about that. I got two more questions for you. I know your time's limited today. So I'd be remiss if
you're
I didn't
fine.
Talk. Go ahead.
I actually have a little more time. I have a little more time than I told you. I have another 15 minutes.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'll use all of it then. So one of the questions I want to ask you about your new album, Icarus. How did you guys come up with the name? And what can people expect from this new album versus your previous six?
Sorry, can you repeat that question about Icarus real quick?
Absolutely. Well, you got a new album on the horizon. It's called Icarus. So I wanted to find out from you how you came up with the name, and then what people can expect maybe that's different about this album versus your previous six.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, first and foremost, it's a short record. It's 11 songs. We really tried to focus on, you know, we went and wrote this record with Johnny Andrews. The past two records we had written with Josh Landry primarily, and we kind of wanted to mix things up. Josh has a lot of personal things going on with his own projects, and he's having a lot of success that we're really excited about. And we were able to go back to our longtime producer, Kyle O'Dell, for this one, who's just an incredible mixer and rock producer. And we definitely go back to our rock roots on this record. With Josh, he likes to always kind of push us out of our box, and we experiment a little bit more with the alternative pop vibes mixed in with the rock. This is very much a rock record. It's back to our roots. It's like a combination of the This Is Your Sign and Down the Rabbit Hole records that we did, but we think the songwriting is a lot better. And so the record, the name of the record came from just the overall theme of the record. Like, people told me, if you had to put the record into one word, what's that word? And I'd say frustration. It's not necessarily all mental health related. I mean, everything's mental health related if you want to make it mental health related, but it's more about, like, our song Dead End Life, the first are just feeling so hopeless and trapped and frustrated with the state of the world right now. Like, no one feels like they can get ahead. Everyone's feeling like they're expected to work twice as hard for less. And people are just barely keeping their heads above water. And the record is really about that. You know, it taps into that frustration. And I just hope the record is, we tried to move away from being too preachy on it. There's one song that's really uplifting and focused on that. But the record really, I hope, is just validating. Like, I hope people can turn it up loud and just, like, have some scream it in the car therapy. Because talking to fans all over the country while we were on that tour, that's what we heard a lot about. It's like, they're just, like, struggling to survive. And so that's what the record is about. And the name Icarus, there's a line in one of our songs on the record called Save Me From My Angels. And it's about addiction. And it talks about Icarus and flying into the sun. And anyone who knows that story from Greek mythology knows that Icarus's father, you know, tried to train him and teach him about, you know, flying and these different things. And Icarus got a little too cocky, a little too proud, and flew a little too close to the sun. And I think that's really relatable when it comes to, you know, when people are frustrated, they turn to vices. They turn to unhealthy forms of coping. And I can really relate to the Icarus character in my life because I feel like I've had so many advantages. I had great parents growing up that taught me a lot of smart things. And sometimes you still just do the stupidest stuff. You know, you're just like, man, like I had every advantage here. Like, my parents, like, taught me all these great things. I've had all this education, and I still just, I've really done some stupid things. I made some dumb mistakes and crashed and burned. And I think this record just really taps into the Icarus in all of us, you know, the version of ourselves that we're just a little bit embarrassed by. And, you know, that frustration really fits in with that as well.
So I'm going to take you back to December of last year. You had a new baby, you and your wife. Take a few minutes, gush on your newborn. How has the dad life been since the newborn's come along?
I love my daughters more than anything in this world. I'll start by saying that. But I will also say that recently, I'm loving, it's funny, some people are like, oh, the newborn stage is the best, the toddler stage is the worst. I can handle tantrums all day long. Like, I take my 2-year-old and we go to swim lessons, we go to dance class. Like, I love that stuff. I can handle tantrums. What I can't handle is being up all night. Like, I was the kid growing up who, like, called mom from the sleepover at 9 p.m. because I was like, hey, mom, I'm tired. I'm miserable. Come get me. I want to go home. Like, I was never the all-nighter type. When I don't have sleep, I am a monster. I am so irritable and rigid and just, it's not a good look for me. It's not good. So that's been really hard, like, to be a little bit vulnerable. It's something I've been working on in my personal therapy. So, like, to be honest about your question, it's been really hard. Our new daughter, Jenna, has really struggled with sleep. And so it's been something that, you know, leaving my wife for tour with a daughter that's waking up 8 to 9 times a night, the guilt that comes with that and the anxiety and the fear, in addition to, like, you know, I'm trying to do vocal training and go to the gym every day and do the things that I need to be a professional athlete, right? A professional vocal athlete. And, you know, knowing that your daughter or your wife is wrangling 2 kids and running on 0 sleep, like, it's been incredibly hard. I would say for preparation for this tour might be one of the hardest things I've ever done, emotionally, mentally, because I've really had to try to find balance in a environment where very little is offered. But despite all of that, the moments you have with those girls, that I have with those girls, make it all worth it. You know, I've had some really special experiences as well with them that I'm grateful for. It's just being a touring musician and having young kids is, I can't imagine, you know, preparing for that or being prepared for that. It's just so, so challenging.
So speaking of family, when you were in Chicago for your acoustic tour, I got a chance to meet your brother. And do you tour with him a lot? I mean, you guys look a lot alike, but you're taller than him. I think he's younger than you, if I'm not mistaken. Is that true?
He is, yeah.
Yeah.
He is.
Does he tour with you all the time, or was that kind of a unique experience for him?
It was a very unique experience. He I've wanted to do something like that for a while now. He's very busy with his own work, and he's a musician too. He's a rapper. Mm. He does a lot of like, I don't even know what to call the genre. It's like pop rap, but he has a really unique sound and voice. He's a talented kid, but he's just really hungry to learn anything about the industry and be around, you know, writing sessions, production, touring. So he's come out to Nashville when we were recording Icarus, and he was a fly on the wall. So he's just fun to have around. So that was the first time we've ever had him on the road. So he ran merch for us and did a great job, and we were grateful for it.
So I got my last question for you. We'll get you out of here. Yeah. If you could choose any band or bands to tour with, or to meet in person, or to collab with, who would they be? You mentioned Shinedown was one of your bands growing up. By the way, we just, in our last episode, I did a poll of over 500 people, and 34% of them said Brent Smith was the best male vocal artist post 2000. So you're not alone. A lot of people like Shinedown. So let's just take them out of the mix for a second. Who else would be on that list?
Let me go with something. I'm trying to think of something kind of weird. I think Miles Kennedy from Alter Bridge.
Mm-hmm. By the way, he was number two. He was number two.
He's a phenomenal vocalist. I think that his like higher register mixed with my kind of more gruff, lower sound could be a really cool blend. I just have no idea what that would sound like. So I think that would be cool. As far as like my favorite voices, I think that like Michael Barr, someone that I've always admired his voice, and just like, if we're talking about just like exuding like pure emotion, I think there are a few people that do it better than him. Outside of rock, man, I'm going to get really weird on you for a second. I think if I'm not in a box genre wise, and this is just Jake Segura, like who could Jake Segura do something with? I grew up on Bare Naked Ladies.
Mm.
And they were like, they're still probably one of my favorite bands ever, purely because like their music just makes me so happy. My best memories of life are associated with that music in the background. So it'd be really fun to try something that's just kind of more fun and not so serious and heavy all the time. So I think if we're talking Citizen Soldier, I think, you know, there are a lot of artists in the rock world I'd love to work with, but, when it comes to just like doing something to be fun and nostalgic, I would love to do something with them.
Well, Jake, I appreciate you sticking around. It's great to talk to you again. I know we talked to you last year. We saw you a couple times. I'll look forward to seeing you in Chicago. And I do appreciate you stopping by, because you were, again, our most downloaded episode so far. I know people are going to eat this one up. I'll post it out on the social. You guys do a killer job on social, by the way. I mean, I don't know if there's another band out there. I know Disturbed is probably one that posts a lot of their stuff every day, but you're out there on Instagram, you're out there on Reels, you're out there on TikTok, you're out there everywhere. You guys do a great job, and it speaks to, I think, the fan base that you have, because they're silent, but they're so you guys aren't one of the, you know, top tier bands. That's no disrespect to you guys. You're on your way, but I think you act like, and you present yourself like that's where you want to be. And you guys are killing it that way. So kudos to you guys.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you making the time too.
You know, one of the things that I appreciate about Jake Segura and the Citizen Soldier band is the fact that they are an independent band, and they have made a decision to stay an independent band amongst all the other bands out there signing with labels and the pressures and the BS that goes with that. They've made that decision to stay independent, and that's very respectable. And just, you know, having a 30-minute conversation with him on the phone and asking him, you know, only a portion of the questions that I could have asked him, but getting some insight into not only the band and his personal life and and the band life and the tour life, and what he has to do to get ready for the tour, and you know how mentally draining it is and physically draining it is, and all of that. But to stay true to their goal of being an independent band is something that's very respectable. I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did, and we'll see you at one of the shows.